You're the lucky one, always having fun. A jack of all trades, a master of none. You look at the world with a smiling eye and laugh. The devil as his train rolls by, give you a song in a one-night stand. You'll be looking at a happy man, cause you're the lucky one. His dream rolls by, give you a song and a one-night stand, and you'll be looking at a happy man, cause you're the lucky one.
It's Sunday afternoon and time once again for Wordplay. I'm your host, Jeff Davis, and joining me in the studio, Lucy Tobin. Lucy, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to see you. So what have you been doing this cold spell?
I've been trying to stay inside. We have a wood stove, so that helps.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And waitressing.
Where are you waitressing now?
Sugar Beet Cafe and Deli in Fairview.
Sugar Beet Cafe and Deli in Fairview. I don't know that one.
It used to be a Huddle House, but it's been this since January. It's really good.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
January a year ago.
Yeah, well, good. We'll put in a plug for them. What kind of food do they have?
Oh, it's delicious. It's Southern New York kind of diner deli combo.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, it's really good quality.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah. How long have you been there?
Since, I think, March or April. So mm-hmm. it's been a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Well, good. Long time staff now.
Yeah, that's true. It's a really good place to work. Good people.
Yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of poets work in the, quote, hospitality industry.
Yeah, it's flexible.
It's flexible, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I definitely think about changing, but it's a hard kind of line of work to leave.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, one of the best ones in Asheville, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. What'd you get your degree in?
Undergrad?
Mm-hmm.
I was a Spanish major and creative writing minor.
Uh-huh.
And probably almost an English major, but there were some requirements I didn't want to take.
Yeah. So. Is that, like, what were the requirements? 18th century?
Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You didn't want to read The Rape of the Lock? Or
yeah, not particularly.
Not particularly.
Yeah. Skipped that.
Yeah. Was that Greensboro?
It was at Guilford College.
Guilford College.
In Greensboro.
Yeah.
And then I just stayed in North Carolina since then.
Uh-huh. Well, it's warmer down here. You're from New Hampshire originally, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yep. Much warmer. New Hampshire is like this or colder, I'd say, for 3 or 4 months a year.
Yeah.
It's cold.
Yeah. Right. My ex-wife grew up in Vermont, so. Mm-hmm.
The exact same thing.
Yeah, we used to go visit her parents in February, and it would be like, 25 below.
Yeah, definitely.
On a warm day. So, yeah. So, what brought you to writing poetry?
I guess I've always read a lot. I was read to, and then I was just a big reader since the time I was a kid. And somehow, I think naturally in high school, my writing, I had always written, but more like journal and, you know, little fragments and pieces of things. And in high school, it turned more into focused poetry writing. In class and outside of class, I think it was just kind of in a typical teenage way. It was an outlet, you know, for all kinds of angst and whatever.
Right.
But some of the poems, you know, they were emotional, but I was also really thinking about them as poems, too. And in college, I guess I just became a little more focused on poetry and just kept going in that direction.
So who were you reading? Who was whose work meant a lot to you when you were learning, you know, to see these things as poems?
The first poet that really influenced me was Sharon Olds. And I think that's typical. I think that happens to a lot of kind of young women poets that I've met. She's really accessible and, you know, kind of exciting, flashy. But, yeah, she was definitely a big influence. Trying to think who else was that musicians have always influenced me a lot. And their lyrics. Like John Darnielle of the Mountain Goats. That's been more recent, but
I don't know the Mountain Goats.
I actually brought a CD of his. So.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Well, we'll listen to a track or two and see what he has to say. Well, good. Well, why don't you jump right in and read a poem for us?
Okay. Let's see, I'm going to read, this is a very new poem, and it's definitely not finished, but it's going somewhere, I hope.
Great.
Leo. Somewhere below, rocking in my parents' imaginations, my sister's being created. Who knows what her webbed soul thinks, waiting on deck of the ship it's humming against. Perhaps people who only exist in memory, imagination, cocooned, porous, flickering in and out like snowstorm power, don't hang in the stars, but in the ocean. Conversely, live bodies want so much bread, music, darkness, it's exhausting. The domed sky over my house, too white tonight for meteor showers. I need to feel lost, swallowed, socked. Food can't scratch this hunger, only darker sky. Music sawing strings of air inside the car, speeding past neon beacons flares, IHOP, Texaco, into the true nighttime farm sky. Old enough to lose a private staring contest with the universe. My eyeballs burn and steam, fill with water. Across the ceiling, black ants form a creak. A baby I can't climb out of bed. Nothing scarier than insects, dreams of colonies, swarms. Say my sister was born under Leo, though it's untrue. But she held that temper and heat, colicky, cramped. Riding in the Volvo's high back seat through unfamiliar, familiar cities, gray rain, gray stoops, blue-gray paint peeling, birthed in my chest a first sadness, almost deja vu's shadow, and I couldn't speak of this because my parents knew their own solitary versions. Often we can't see past our bedroom's muted skins. I live inside a form I hardly understand. What do organs look like, and blood sapped of light? Ants together work like a brain, neurons silently directing each other, although each ant alone knows very little more than how often it collides with another, and that it's hungry. My body runs itself that way, colony of separate lives, synthesized by meteors, violins, intimate in the dark interior, soul rises to the surface. Be still, my voice, my pulsing skin, I want to feel that small again. Even up close, it seems stars would be incomprehensible.
Very nice. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. You work in a really open kind of structure. And you have an interesting way of moving the poem forward. I mean, they're not narrative. I mean, they are storytelling, sort of.
Yeah, that's interesting. Go ahead.
But not in a conventional sense, certainly.
That's actually a great compliment for me, because I feel like the sort of tension between narrative and lyric poetry is something I've thought about a lot, and I definitely want to be somewhere between those two. I'm really drawn to both.
Yeah. They're both great modes of poetry. I'm trying to remember. Someone just... the lyric is the obliteration of the story, whereas this narrative poem is, an extension of the lyric, which that sort of rang true in some ways.
Yeah, I can see that.
I tend to write more lyric work, I guess, in spite of myself. So.
I think about it a lot. Like, how do you define a lyric poem?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's...
it's tough.
Tough, right, yeah.
But I guess it's kind of the... or for me, I think it's kind of the either, like, lyric emotional moment, like something about emotion and imagery, I guess, are the core of lyric.
Right,
work.
And almost an obliteration of temporality, too.
Yeah, definitely.
And often, so.
Like, collapsed time.
Right. Compressed or something.
Yeah.
Whereas narrative is more open and, has something to tell us.
Right, a specific, specific content in mind.
In time.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's a very interesting voice, indeed. So, and you have other things that are very playful and other, work in other modalities, so.
Yeah, I try to, I definitely feel like I can't settle on one form or one style. I hope that my voice is kind of consistent or is what holds it together. But kind of depending on my mood or the content, I think the form changes a lot. It's kind of like creating... My friend Tua was describing it, because she sort of writes the same way. It's like creating a new machine for every single poem instead of kind of one machine that works fitting the content into it.
Right.
Because there's definitely some great poets that do that, but that's not for me.
Not the way you work.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, good. Well, let's hear some more. Let's hear some of these other voices.
Okay. Let's see. This is a much shorter poem. It's called Dear Unbearable.
Oh, this is fun. Yeah.
Dear new element, dear late night tattoo, dear magnet and curfew, dear next century, dear line where oil and vinegar touch, dear enough, time zone, landslide, prime number, dear. Dearest cost, equinox, equator, dear perfect equation, seventh sense, alchemist, dear favorite word, dear farthest station.
Nice. How did that one, where do you find occasions for your work?
I guess it's easiest if I think specifically, so I will talk about this last one. I was writing poems that had to do with adolescence and unrequited love.
All the usual things.
Yeah, right, all the usual things, but trying to do them in a original way, which is actually really hard. And I found success with some poems, and a lot of them ended up way too melodramatic and on the cheesy side. So I was writing poems kind of to a person that, I guess I can say I, but really the speaker.
The persona or whatever.
The poetic voice, whoever it is, had unrequited feelings for, and I was trying to give them a name. And then my teacher actually at the time, Gabby Calvacaresi, suggested that I use a noun or use something that was not actually a literal name, but kind of more metaphorical. So I started making a list of ideas, and that list turned into a poem.
A poem.
Yeah. So that was one way. I don't think I have one general way that poems come to me. I think it really depends. But a lot of times it'll be from a little fragment or, a line or an image. But usually, I don't know, I feel like the poems that end up doing well for me come out a little bit bigger than that right away. Like, there's more to them, and they kind of propel themselves even in the first draft. Because I end up writing a lot of fragments that don't turn into anything or kind of, you know, get thrown away, die on the computer somewhere.
Keep them archived now.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, shouldn't really throw them away. But
they may surface, you never know.
Yeah. It's true. I'm learning that. Yeah. I definitely got taught while I was at Warren Wilson to save all my drafts. So I started doing it.
Good. Who'd you study with at Warren Wilson?
Let's see. I did 5 semesters because I did one extra. So I worked with Joan Aylshire, Deborah Alberry, Alan Williamson, Barbara Ross, and Gabby Calva-Caressi.
Was it a useful experience?
Yeah, it was great.
It was good.
Yeah, definitely exceeded my hopes for it. It was really great.
Oh, good. Yeah.
And I'm sure you interview a lot of Warren Wilson grads.
Yeah, we see a lot of Warren Wilson grads and some faculty. And they're always interesting folks.
I think it's a great community, I feel. Definitely lucky that I could be part of it.
We're lucky to have them here in town.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, what's the ground you explore family situations a lot, it looks to me, seems to me. And I guess that's one of the fundamental, grounds of poetry. I mean, it always has been. But you're exploring this middle voice too, between the lyric and the narrative. It's really it makes for a very different kind of poem.
Thank you.
Let's hear another maybe something in this with the same grounding, but in this that you're exploring this narrative that's not narrative, but
I think this one is like that. Diagnosis. It wasn't good to leave the faucet dripping on that Tupperware lid. The cat's ears swivel like sirens. That much is clear to me. Because you're very scared, says the doctor, I can see how scared you are. There's your diagnosis. Once I admired my lover's eyes, one pupil smaller than the other, and now one eye is all shadow. E is for easy, I think, when he can't read it, bold as an anchor tattooed on the wall. How many fingers, I ask in bed, our faces almost touching. 2, 3, how many? Don't wait for me to give you all the answers, the doctor says. Possibly there are none. He sleeps through the stretched waiting hours. Wide awake on the couch, a city inside me is trembling to flood. Gulls, dark tips, swarm at the windows. Sleep, blindness, death are not all the same, I tell myself again. But if my face disappears, if the world disappears, what rises? An answer is a future that resembles the present. In the office, I watch his face go white. Questions are sandbags. By this afternoon, we'll know how afraid to be, and then we'll work on treading there.
Nice.
Thanks.
Yeah. I don't know Sharon Ohl's work that well. I read it along the way. And but what I remember is that, I mean, you're working with a voice that's not hers. And with material that would have been prime for a confessional poem, and in maybe, who knows, in somebody else's hands. So
yeah, and I think that's what I used to write. It definitely originally started out writing confessional poems.
Yeah, quick quote.
And hearing you say that actually is great, because sometimes I still assume that that's what I write, even though I've made all kinds of efforts to complicate it. But I actually feel kind of bad even saying that, because I think there's a lot of stigma around confessional poetry that, mm-hmm. you know, doesn't apply to all of it. Some of it's...
Sure. Some of it's still quite extraordinary work.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Indeed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I did want to find some way to definitely use autobiographical material because I can't seem to move away from it. It's just mm-hmm. what I want to write about. But to complicate it or expand it, at some point in the poem, at least expand it away from me or just my experience. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, make it either, I don't know if global's the right word, almost make it like metaphysical or something, or just, you know, away from the day-to-day life at mm-hmm. some point mm-hmm. into another realm of poetry.
Yeah, it's not the quotidian, you know, ordinary, yes, stuff mm-hmm. of life.
Yeah.
Know. Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll be right back.
Daylight falls, and I'm lost in the big parade. Hold my hand, darling, I'm afraid of the daylight. Shady stars, cool and languid for life alone. Safe in shadow, it's never stop.
I'm your host, Jeff Davis, and you're listening on Asheville FM. Joining me in the studio today, poet Lucy Tobin. Hello again, Lucy. How are you?
Hello again. Good.
good. Still good. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, the heat's on here, so we're okay.
Yeah, trying to thaw out.
Yeah, it's like, what, 20 degrees outside or something
Yeah,
like
the
that.
Most, probably. Yeah. Probably dropping fast.
Yes, right, since it's getting dark. So, well, a good thing to do on a nice cold night is to read poems.
Mm-hmm.
So let's read to us.
Okay. Well, this is one of the poems that sort of is in that category I was talking about before, of poems about adolescence, mm-hmm. and trying to tap into that experience a little bit. Slow Dance. Jack Francis asked me to dance, and we made a steeple in the old gym, and the floor around us and between us spiraled red, purple, and white disco lights, and I was so young. How old? Maybe 12, because after 12 I wouldn't dance or talk or hardly look at boys at all. That's why it was a mistake, the Sadie Hawkins dance when I asked Mark and then ignored him all night, madly, like it was my secret mission to make him feel invisible, and my eyes hurt like they've been slapped with a wet rag. This will always be my life, alone forever, I thought, back and forth between bathroom stall and mirror, hiding even from friends in iridescent dresses, braces, grinding on their dates like waves on pebbles. The music used to move through me like a prisoner or phantom limb, and I'd fake fascination in anything, someone's new shoes or gossip, to avoid dancing. Those years of believing I'd never be desired, and each year that made it true. Then suddenly a boy who looked like a man shone into my face like phosphorescence, like Christmas lights downtown. His naked body unbelievable, as dolphins half beaching themselves during the hunt. And when we saw on the quiet inlet at Folly, palm-sized fish corralled, those gray planetary eyes, my gaze peeled off myself. Once in an empty house in L.A., that boy man taught me to listen, move painfully slow as raindrops slide down windows. Still, I'd rather dance alone than with lovers, strangers, friends. Bodies in public giving, holding back, make me shy, a child. But there's a vision of me who holds your eyes even while the DJ bleeds across songs. I don't look away. I blush. I burn through the shame.
Nice.
Thank you.
I mean, for a poem that comes out of adolescence, that's uncommonly honest and, you know, and real.
Thanks.
Yeah.
It took a while to get there. Lots of.
Oh, yeah.
It's not with that poem necessarily, but just with the whole subject. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. So, will that, do you think that'll make it into the book for young people that you're working on?
It might. I'm not sure yet. I've sent that editor a whole a stack of
poems.
Yeah, and we'll kind of see. I think it's going to be something about chapbook length.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I might write some new work for it too.
Yeah. Well, good, good. That's not yet ready for publication, but mm-hmm. something to look forward to from Lucy Tobin.
Yeah.
And it'll be out from?
It'll be out from Nomalos, which is a new company.
Nomalos. Mm-hmm. Namelos.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. All right. Good, good. Well, let's hear another poem.
Okay. This is a newer one, too. It's, I don't know, from the last 6 months or so. Spring. Its body juts like a tiny penis, wings literally lacy, doily-esque in wide, white, looping stitches. Dragonfly, color of a lover's eyelids, blue scales, guitar frets, amphibian. Daily rains fed the river high this year. Don't touch me, sang the words all winter. But pharmaceuticals, Wellbutrin, Zoloft, their fragile combination, and chickens in our backyard, the wild turkey skulking like a prehistoric gray peacock through the Swiss chard, led my skin rivering. Why will this creature let me see it this clearly? When the aperture swings wide, nights come flooding the mountains. Crows and robins belt a flat line, and my mind hospitalizes. What can save me now? Narrow focus, warm egg, blazing insect.
Interesting. Almost imagistic in places. I mean, it's got a certain compression to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That describes pretty well how I felt like it was different than my past work.
Yeah. Would you read it again?
Sure.
Yeah. Let's hear it again.
Okay. Its body juts like a tiny penis, wings literally lacy, doily-esque in wide white looping stitches. Dragonfly, color of a lover's eyelids, blue scales, guitar frets, amphibian. Daily rains fed the river high this year. Don't touch me, sang the words all winter. But pharmaceuticals, Wellbutrin, Zoloft, their fragile combination, and chickens in our backyard. The wild turkey skulking like a prehistoric gray peacock through the Swiss chard led my skin rivering. Why will this creature let me see it this clearly? When the aperture swings wide, nights come flooding the mountains. Crows and robins belt a flat line, and my mind hospitalizes. What can save me now? Narrow focus, warm egg, blazing insect.
Yeah, that's quite different from...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's moving definitely away from the narrative and more into the lyric.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was definitely not intentional. It's just a few poems kind of like this or in this vein came out all at once in a few days. And they were the first poems I'd written since I graduated that felt solid and kind of not exactly finished, but pretty much finished in my mind, like maybe only small changes would be made.
Yeah.
And yeah, they were all kind of in this new imagistic compressed style.
Do you have another one with you?
I do. Yeah. Let me see if I can find it. Okay, this is another one.
Okay.
Empty hand. Diminishing like stars blown out, you watch each disobedience in awe. You shit yourself on the bus. Think, well, that's different. One sense shuts down. One limb. Teaspoons quiver. Shiny railings line the shower. Silver spokes. You've always wished to travel. Smoke secret cigs in airplane restrooms. Tongue kiss soft enough to hear the ocean fill your lover's temple, neck, hips. Part bird, part fish, part machine, your body holds its gifts like aces. Weigh the hand, empty as it hits the table. See dandelion heads shushed off, floating at a speed that says, now is the end we're reaching. Uncanny, as that day outside the barn you fainted when a dream swallowed the world a dream.
Nice. Yeah.
Thanks. And that's, I forgot that when I wrote these poems, I actually was giving myself a structure. They're all 14 lines. And I wasn't counting syllables, but I imposed a right margin. So I don't know, maybe that structure somehow helped me branch out in terms of the content.
Yeah. Apparently so.
Yeah, I think so. Right. It would seem that way. It
seems to have worked.
Right. Yeah. And I'd like to write more in this group, but it only happened for a few days, and then they weren't quite coming out like that.
Yeah, so. Yeah. What came out after that?
That first poem I read, Leo, that was one of them.
Yeah.
What else? This poem, Generation, started out as one of those in the 14-line group, and I kind of revised it out of that and expanded it a little bit into couplets.
Okay, it morphed.
So it morphed,
yeah. Well, let's hear that.
Okay.
Yeah, do share that.
Generation. What circulated in my mother's mother's house? Fermented sugar, smoke, three children, greyhounds breathless after a plastic lure, her heart, she took the widest detour around. Gut to head to gut, then mornings were a magic show. Trapped, beautiful when young, my grandmother's body caved, isolated itself. Vodka and tonic turned to tonic water, but by then she said, I hardly recognize myself. Felled limbs, muscles thinned as pulled pork or yarn tearing. Bones, dusty expired pills, broken in the bottle. I still sense when I stretch on the floor or squint through sadness, rain on the road all night without glasses, her morphing pain. Inside are grandmother's eggs, sleep eggs of our mothers, and inside them, nesting dolls, our eggs rest. New age comforts chafe my family. Still, like fear or blood, like wind, energy must circulate. Maybe the dead try again in constellations.
Mm, nice. And I can see some of the compression at work. That must have been there in the first instance of the poem.
But definitely. Yeah. That just stood out to me when I was reading it out loud, that I kind of, those lines, felled limbs, muscles thinned as pulled pork, that was the beginning of the compressed version, and you can definitely hear the shift, I think.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, it makes me think about a little bit of revision, maybe.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, as is, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can have, you know, different types of,
voices.
Within the same poem, certainly. And yet that gets back to the ground, to the narrative ground of, family experience and so on that we all share, in some measure. So, with Nina Locke,
hopefully.
Right. Well, good. Interesting. So these are recent?
These are all, so far, well, I guess, Slow Dance, that longer adolescent one I had written while I was at Warren Wilson, and Dear Unbearable. But Generation, this one was newer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm kind of relieved to see that I have more work post Warren Wilson than I thought I did.
Because
It's definitely, it's slower production not being in school.
Sure.
But,
sure. Right.
It's good to.
You don't have a class to get the poems ready for.
I don't have anyone to give my poems to, I don't have deadlines every 3 weeks. So it's slower, but it's good that it's still moving along.
How long has it been since you were at Warren Wilson?
A year this month. Actually, right now, because it's residency there now. It's graduation in 2 days. Exactly a year.
Well, good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a big, big, wide world out there. So how many poems have you written, say, in the last year? What do you think?
Well, there's a big difference for me between ones I've written that I would, like, potentially bring here or send out.
Yeah.
And I have lots of other poems that are definitely not at that point. But they're... So I don't know, I work in a sort of gray way. It's not very black and white.
How do you decide between a poem that you would, send out and a poem that doesn't make the cut or,
Well, it usually seems obvious to me, but now, since today, I'm kind of questioning my ability to do that because I showed a few of these newer poems that I'd written to some people and asked their opinions if they were ready, radio ready. And I really didn't think they were. I felt like, they were kind of still fragments and definitely not cohesive yet. And they said definitely yes. So that made me think maybe I need someone to be getting feedback from just to kind of...
It's always good to have.
Yeah, it just really so is. You're not in, your own vacuum of having no idea what's good or not.
Yeah, and spinning around and
because I definitely, if I had heard that a while ago, I might have moved forward faster with some of them or,
Well, good. Good plan. New Year's resolution.
Yeah, right. Definitely have someone that I regularly show my poems to.
Yeah.
I think I probably needed a little bit of a break from that, too, after graduating.
Oh, yeah. You were, you had, 5 semesters of pressure.
Yeah, nonstop.
So, yeah.
Right. So, it was nice to sort of come back into just why I write poetry in the first place and kind of just learn again what my own voice is and my own style without getting anybody's feedback on, how to revise.
Right. And who knows, maybe the shift wouldn't have happened, mm-hmm. that your work has gone through in the last year. And
yeah,
who knows? Yeah,
it's true. I think it does kind of feel good in a way, I think, to have graduated. And even though at the time when I graduated, I knew that I was happy with my work, but it wasn't still quite where I wanted it to be. And yeah, to sort of see changes that I made, kind of bringing together all the advice that I got from different teachers, mm-hmm. and then choosing what works for me and what maybe doesn't. And mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good. Good. Well, let's listen to some more music here.
Fog lifts from the harbor. Dawn goes down today. An agent crests the shadows of a nearby alleyway. Piles of broken bricks, signposts on the path. Every moment points toward the aftermath. Yeah. Sailors straggle back from their nights out on the town. Hopeless urchins from the city gather around. Spies from Imperial China, washing with the tide. Every battle heads to war. Surrender on both sides. And I am coming home to you with my own blood in my mouth. And I am coming home to you if it's the up somewhere, and a dozen hawks descend. Every moment leads toward its own sad end. Yeah. Ships loosed from their moorings capsize and then they're gone. Sailors with no captains watch a while and then move on. And an agent crests the shadows, and I head in her direction. All roads lead to war, the same blocked intersection. I am coming home to you with my own blood in my mouth. And I am coming home to you.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that in.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Lively, lively, mm-hmm. Yeah. You're listening to Word Play. I'm your host, Jeff Davis, and our guest today is Lucy Tobin. So, Lucy, let's hear some... You've got some older work now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's hear... This is before this sea change that's been going on in the last year.
Right, definitely. So this was probably from the year before that, or definitely from the year before that.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay. I just want... Every night I fill pages in my journal. All day I say, yeah, Susan's party sounds fun. The math quiz sucked, but whatever. In my bedroom wall with thumbtacks, fuck you and your untouchable face. Later, my dad checks to see what I wrote. I won't say it enrages me that my parents typed me a letter about my anger. Wallpaper drips like liquid metal when my mom asks me for the truth. Never will I say, my insides are a factory on fire and there's no way to escape. The girl doesn't know I dream of her basement bedroom's low-paneled ceiling, worn orange carpet, tucked under rafters a double bed, black and white comforter. I just want to lie there and believe I might be her favorite language.
Nice, still nice, even though, you know, it's obviously from an earlier mood.
So, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. There's still the specificity, the detail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Well, let's hear some more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. I guess I'll comment on it after. I'd rather just read the poem. And then.
Sure.
Fans in a photograph. The light from outside is so light it's white, really, while inside the room is deep gray. Gray of winter mornings better slept over. Smell of a sleeping bag's lining. Between them, there's a longing. One in front of the window, light floating through her metal cage and blades, neck bent towards cracked floorboards. The other, taller, is turned away. He looks towards an old sewing machine. They must still be in the factory. Oh, the sadness of fans in factories. The sadness of fans in hallway closets. Sadness also of fans in winter, which it is, in February. Such sadness as one fan upstairs, next to the projector, never used because dust ruins film. The sadness of a broken fan, blades unhinged, a misaligned bone. Oh, broken fan at the end of the bed. Eventually it's August, and a woman is on top of a man, both horizontal almost. They move like pieces of interlocking machinery, sometimes separate, sometimes in unison, sometimes breaking. The air is cobwebbed, only a green sheet on the bed, and soon the couple will need to not be touching, except maybe a finger. The fan longs to be touched. Oh, the sadness of me, who sees everything in her likeness, who believes that fans might believe, through their mouths, moans turn into wind.
That's very nice, too.
Thank you.
Oh, the sadness of me, who sees everything in her likeness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and this poem, I've wanted to write more poems kind of in this one's vein that I feel like somehow is bigger than a lot of my work, or mm-hmm. I think because the first person, it doesn't come in until the very last stanza.
Right, almost incidentally.
Right, yeah. So somehow, you know, I've attempted to kind of do more like this, but it hasn't quite happened yet.
Hasn't happened yet.
No.
Yeah. So how do you work?
What do you mean?
When you're working on poems.
How do I work?
Yeah.
I used to always work in a notebook. I would do drafts by hand, and then once I felt like it had gotten a little bit cohesive, I would type it,
mm-hmm.
and then print it out, do written revisions, and then change them on the computer. And I've gotten to the point recently where I do it directly on the computer. And
really?
Mm-hmm. I do the first draft on the computer, and I save it, and then I'll never change that draft.
Yeah.
I'll just start a new one,
right.
And you know, and I save them all in a file, like 1.0, 1.2, or, you know.
I noticed in the poems you sent me some were like 5.0, and yeah.
Right,
yeah.
So that was my recent filing system that really helps me, just knowing that the original drafts are there, so I don't have to, you know, try to remember what the changes were.
Right. You can actually look at them and see.
Yeah, I can go back. And, yeah, I think it was kind of liberating to just start writing directly on the computer, even though it seemed somehow less, you know, traditionally poetic, or
right.
maybe,
yes.
You know, but it's, Yeah, it's...
You're supposed to write with a quill by candlelight, of course.
Yeah exactly. Right. Or at least on a typewriter. Or, you know.
Yes, I guess we can allow typewriters, yes.
Right. Yeah, it's an old-fashioned world, kind of. But, yeah, it's on the computer. Do you write on the computer?
Usually not first drafts. I usually do write, you know, not with a quill on... But
with a pen on
paper. Mm-hmm. Sometimes on napkins, or like when I'm driving, for some reason I get, you know, I start receiving these phrases, and so I keep a pad with me in the car, and have learned to write without looking at it.
Wow! So I was gonna say that's a dangerous time for the ideas to be coming.
Right. It's worse than texting, but yeah.
So you just blindly write, and then it's still legible later?
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah. At least triggers some memory.
I've learned to angle each sentence or phrase slightly differently so that they don't, like, obliterate one another.
Oh, yeah, you're not writing on top of...
Right,
yeah. Oh, that's really amazing. One-handed.
Strange, but well, however the muse works.
Right. Yep, exactly. And I definitely have a lot of handwritten notes, too. Not in the car, but, you know, sometimes I'll think of something, an idea or a line, and feel like, oh, I'm definitely going to forget that, and I don't want to, so.
So, yeah, like if you're working or something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
if I'm working, I always, well, because I'm a waitress, I have, you know, the pads that you take the order on, so I always will just write the notes on that and put them in my pocket. And
cool. Yeah, right.
Collect them at the end of the day.
Well, save those.
Yeah, I know, definitely. Yeah. But it's hard when you know, if you've been writing for a long time, there's too many notebooks to save. What do you do with them?
Right.
Really? I want to get a trunk or something to keep them in.
Mm-hmm. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Right. Classic solution.
Or maybe old suitcases or something like that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, be sure and let your, your literary executor know where they all are.
Right. Leave some kind of letter about it, yeah.
Right.
Or, I don't know, maybe not. There's probably some journals, like, more like diary-type journals that I should burn or something before it gets
to... Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no,
don't think.
Keep them all.
Never, yeah. No, I have, since I've been writing about adolescence, I have wanted to go back and read some of those journals.
Yeah,
even
sure.
Though it'll be probably not a really especially fun experience, but it could be good for the work,
I guess. Yes, that's right.
Or it might be really funny. I don't know.
It'll be funny.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you'll go.
Yep.
Right. Well, let's. We've got time for another poem, so.
Okay.
Why don't you treat us to one?
Okay. This is a newer one, and here it goes.
Alrighty.
We deserve nothing too specific. In the memoir, the man's vision darkens. Streetlights dim in wide intersections, and on walks in woods. On sand, his ankle bone shatters. For 3 days, I couldn't not look, like a freeway pileup or execution. I still can't understand how we read that then, with cooled coffee, a view of other buildings' lit windows. Jay and I in our blank-walled winter apartment, not 3 months past diagnosis. I read it like pulp romance, loves music, loves to dance, fast wing-paged novels of sex and horror, sucking strawberry candies flat or whole pink packs of gum near some body of water. Like when I was a girl, the senses showing off their pre-sex pleasure, saliva, boards, lapped in silty waves. A metaphor I've heard for healing is accepting Holland when you'd wanted Italy. But metaphors are implosive. What else to call the love we projected on each other? Instructions are numbered, much more specific. Car trips, quitting jobs, marathons of TV shows on DVD, poems hung on a clothesline, IV needle left in bandaged overnight. Sleeping in a bed alone, the blinds sucked in and out. Sometimes, if the words are boring and soft, a voice crawls fingertips through my t-shirt to the skin. like circles girls make on classroom carpets, feather-touching skulls, shoulders, crack an egg on the head, let the yolk run down. I want a body without guilt. We believe the other loved too coldly. Well, we fell in love in a lampshade yellow room, and even illness is not malicious. My mind turns grief into something harder to let go. I need out. Just leave me noise, shivers, living flesh.
Very nice. Extraordinary.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well done. Well done.
We got in your car and we hit the highway. Eastern sun was rising over the mountains, yellow and blood red bits. Like a kaleidoscope. And flaming swords may guard the Garden of Eden. We consulted maps from earlier days, dead languages on our tongue, holding on to our last hope. And the day was bright and fine, and the highway sign said San Bernardino welcomes you. Filled the bathtub, and you got in the warm, warm water. I pulled petals from my pocket. I loved you so much just then. And it was hard, but you were brave. You are splendid, and we will never be alone in this world, no matter what they say. We're gonna be okay. We were safe inside, and our new son cried, San Bernardino.